Accession number 5225, reel 4.
Mr. Burnt, reel 4.
The Wrights were negotiating in moving to, as we heard, or I heard, a council house. These were very nice council houses, and indeed, if they were council houses, they were very nice. Up the Burford Road. Very smart houses, they were indeed. And Mrs. Wright was going to have one of these houses. And she wasn't going to have an evacuee from the East End messing it up. Therefore, steps were made to have me moved. Previous to that, we had a good relationship. They welcomed my family, my parents, my grandmother had been to visit on more than one occasion and was made very welcome. Mr. Wright made what I thought was a very peculiar remark. It's the sort of remark that I would make today, just to be funny. But I couldn't see the sense of it at the time, and it really mystified me. And in a way, it turned me slightly against him. As the song goes, 'twas on a Sunday morning, but yes, it was a Sunday. And we knew that parents were going to visit, because we corresponded. And I'm standing outside, not knowing what to do. It was a sunny day. Mr. Wright said, "Do you want a job?" And I said, "Yes, what's that?" He said, "Get a broom with a very long handle and sweep those clouds away, ready for your mother's visit." Well, I took him at his word until I looked up at the sky and found out how far the clouds were. And I thought, what an idiot. When's he asking me to do that? See, in a way, I said earlier, I felt grown up. What happened when war was declared? 3rd of September. Well, this was the strange customs of the country, which was part of the division between us from the town and them in the country. Well, when do you buy your comics? There was a boy next door. Oh, you get your comics on a Sunday. On a Sunday? Unheard of. Comics come out on Friday. You don't get them on Sunday. Oh, well, we do here. And it was almost, the house next door was a local distribution point for the Sunday newspapers, which was mid-morning. It was not at breakfast time like we'd been used to at home. So there were different customs to get used to. So I'm next door waiting for the Sunday newspapers and more important, my comic. And the radio was on. And I heard the announcement from Downing Street. But like the grown-up boy that I was, I did feel very grown up. I heard the announcement. Therefore, we are at war. I shrugged my shoulders and said, well, that's it then. We're at war. And then waited for my comic.
And what was the reaction around you? Of the Wrights or of the boy's parents or whoever was there?
I can't remember the boy's parents being in the room at the time, although I think one of them must have been. But I would like to think I said aloud, well, that's it then. And they must have accepted it. And I just went outside and there was nothing to do indoors. The announcement had been made. What else was there to do? Well, it's Sunday. And that had a different lifestyle all of its own, you see. Living at home in Plaistow, a row of terraced houses, backed by another row of terraced houses. One was closed in. You could play in the back garden, and that was my territory on a Sunday. Sunday being Sunday, one wasn't allowed out in the street. There were these rules that parents had. One went to Sunday school.
What religion?
Church of England. One was sent to Sunday school. One did not play out in the street on a Sunday. Well, I couldn't understand this, not at nine. But of course, as you get older, you realise that people do like some peace and quiet on one day of the week, and Sunday is a good day as any. Other things at home were...
So what was the contrast then with the Sunday life in Oxfordshire?
Well, I could play out of doors on a Sunday. And not out of doors in their own back garden, but in somebody else's, or out in the front. One had the whole wide world. Again, freedom. Very strange. But I think I took to it fairly well, grasped the nettle in both hands, as it were. Another thing that the lifestyle that was a contrast was at home. As I say, bed by seven in the winter, 8 o'clock in the summer. And Saturdays and Sundays, one went to bed in the afternoon. Well, how ridiculous to go to bed on a summer afternoon. Couldn't go to sleep. It was so, well, foreign to one's way of life. The body clock wouldn't allow one to go to sleep. But no, you must have rest, particularly if you were going out in the evening. It was going to be a late night. I can always remember listening to the radio from downstairs. Come listen to the band, which was at about 1:30 on a Saturday afternoon. I used to lay awake and try and hear the band. I suppose I dozed off, but there we are. Parents had their children's, well, upbringing and responsibilities at heart, and you were growing, therefore you needed the rest. But in the country, no. I quickly got out of the habit of saying grace, because I didn't have mother there to prompt me and make sure I said it. I was made at home to say, as I said earlier, first one up to the table gets the crust. Well, yes, that was one ritual, but after one's finished and the plate was cleared and you didn't get down until your plate was empty, one had to say, thank God for my good tea, breakfast, dinner, whatever it was. Thank you for my good dinner. Please God, may I get down? And Mum would say yes, or Grandma. But one kept that up for appearance's sake, and because it had been drummed into us for so long. One kept that up for a time, but the habit slowly died away, and there was no, oi, you haven't said your grace.
So I presume that's not a difference necessarily between country and town, but perhaps the rites didn't have the same sort of religious views.
Yes, that was true, and let's face it, their boy was in his 20s, so there was a marked contrast between me, a 9-year-old, and their married son.
What hours did you keep in the country?
To start with, I think that it was much about the same as at home. Breakfast about 8 o'clock and in bed by 8. There was enough to do during the day and possibly one was tired. The radio was on quite a lot in the evenings at the rites. And I would hear the music and sing to the music. And Clever Clogs would sing to music that he hadn't heard before and then proudly announce that he hadn't heard that music before, yet he could follow it, and he was told to be quiet, and because he was just that half a beat behind and spoiling it for them. But then I thought, well, they're not my mother and father, so I can do what I like. But as I say, all was going fairly smooth until we had this upset, this stomach upset, on two successive Fridays. And that was my downfall.
I think that's a little curious. Well, I mean, children do get sick from time to time. And it seems odd that that should have put the Wrights off so much. Or was Mrs. Wright particularly house proud, or do you think there had been some other things and that was really just the last straw?
I would like to think that there hadn't been other things. But she was moving. She was going to move, and she was going to move from this, well, old, early 1900 type of house, which is still there, even in 1981. She was moving from that house into a brand new, very late 1930s house. All modern, etc., etc., and she wasn't going to have her house messed up by the likes of me. One can understand it in retrospect. She had had her child and all that that had entailed. So, yes, she kept her house clean. She was house proud. So she wasn't going to have it spoiled. And possibly moving to a council house, as they thought, there would be inspections from the council. So standards had to be, seen to be, kept up.
Had she and her husband eaten the fish?
I think they had.
So what was wrong with it then?
Just the piece that I had had, or something that had disagreed with me earlier in the day, or just part of growing up. By that time, this was October time, so I'd been there 6 or 7 weeks, I would say. The pace of life, or the change of environment, was beginning to tell. This was more than an extended holiday. So the body, although the body can accept change for a short period, this was a prolonged change, and it may have been reacting, perhaps freed from parental control. I was doing things that I wouldn't have done at home. I was eating things or not eating things I would have done at home. I was perhaps mixing my food differently, eating too many sweets. Who knows? But certainly there was a disagreement in the digestive system, and it just, something had to go, and it did. All over the bed, all over my pyjamas, all over the floor, and it's not very nice, is it? So one can understand it.
Can you remember any feeling of, well, this war's going on a long time, after the war had been going a month or so, and the excitement of being an evacuee had worn off?
No. Not too conscious of that. You see, we were still fairly close with the school. We weren't going to school full time, but we were meeting, if not daily, every other day for a couple of hours. But one was just, it was a long holiday, wasn't it, as far as we were concerned. But I was getting the feeling of being unwanted by the Wrights. I'm dwelling on this point. I think it's significant, but I was beginning to feel unwanted. They were moving, and they didn't want me to move with them.
Was there any thought of your going back home, back to London?
Well, there was, unbeknown to me. After the euphoria of war being declared and the air raid sirens on the first couple of days, nothing seemed to happen at home. So one is told, and disenchantment set in with others, and evacuees began to drift back. My mother cried every night, and so much so that my grandmother had said to her, well, if you're going to keep feeling like this, you better have him back. But they thought, no, they better leave it a little bit longer, just to see what happened. And winter was coming, and who knows. And then that was. The balloon did go up, didn't it?
What was the atmosphere when your parents came to visit you at the Wrights? You said she was crying every night. Does that mean it was somewhat fraught reunion.
Well, yes, it was, but relief that I was all right. I said that we used to write weekly. But there was, she could see me, she could hold me, she could stand back and say, well, her darling boy was no different really from before, and with a gun in his hand, certainly there was that change in him. But he was well cared for, he was clean, he was had no marks of ill treatment, i.e. wasn't beaten by the rights or etc. So why should she worry? She thought that she was doing the best for me, even at her emotional expense.
How did you feel about seeing them when they came?
Well, it was all right, because they brought me things. Don't laugh, they did. And they brought me presents, they brought me toys, new toys. They brought me some of my toys from home, because by now, what intended to be the dress rehearsal of the evacuation on the 1st of September had turned into reality. So I was there to stay. All right, everybody was saying it would be over by Christmas, meaning Christmas 1939 and then Christmas 1940 and so on. But so it was going to be a little bit permanent. Therefore, one was established in the country, one ought to have a few more home comforts, such as the familiar toys, the Meccano set, and that kept me busy during the dark evenings. Cars, dinky cars, which I used to roll down the slope of in the garden path, in competition with the boy next door. But there was, as I say before, and I'll say again, this newfound freedom of enjoyment. It was a long holiday.
When you switched houses, billets, in Tipping Norton, did you feel that you wanted to go home? You said there'd been a possibility your mother and grandmother had talked about it, but what about you?
Ah, well, they hadn't talked about it in front of me, of course. And I was still did as I was told, even from 80-odd miles away. The long arm of grandmother stretched very far. I say it was grandmother because I'm sure it was more grandmother's decision than mother's. It was grandmother's decision in the form of advice, I would think. But you will take heed, won't you? Nodding her head up and down vigorously. So when I switched billets, it was just a case of exchanging one home for another. A little bit bewildered at the change, but one settled down in the new home. The changing of home was a bit traumatic. It seemed to happen one Saturday morning. I was sent round with a note. I was told to wait until Uncle came home, or Mr. Haynes, as he was then. When he came home from his 5.5-day-a-week job, when he came home at 1 o'clock, he saw me sitting down there, and he said in his broad Oxfordshire accent, "Who be this then?" "Oh, this is our evacuee. I've been told to take him in by the rights." Oh. But,
was that the first you knew of it?
Well, there were rumours that somebody around about would take somebody, and I thought that Mrs. Haynes was willing to do anything for anybody. Since found out that Mrs. Haynes had said she would take an evacuee, but missed the instruction of going to the town to select one. Consequently, none was sent to her, so she was still available. And the grapevine must have drummed along, and Mrs. Wright had heard of this. There was a vacancy, she'd got surplus, natural, and bingo, I was there.
Just when was it that you moved? Which house did you have your birthday?
Sorry, my birthday?
Yes. The Wrights or the Hayes?
Oh, it was Mrs. Haynes's birthday. It was on a Saturday. This was late in November, and I can't remember now whether it was the 22nd or the 23rd, but I found it. Oh, she says it was a nice day because it was my birthday. And my first recollection of seeing Mrs. Haynes was I opened the door and she was kneeling in front of the grate. That was her weekly Saturday morning job, to clean the grate, because it was the old-fashioned kitchen type stove that she had, and the black lead and etc. So it was a natural sort of greeting, I suppose, totally unexpected as far as she was concerned.
How would you compare the houses physically, the Wrights and the Haynes?
Oh, totally different. The house that I eventually went to, 4 York Terrace, Worcester Road, Chipping Norton, Oxon. And it was, or it still is, a terraced row of 4 houses. And by number 4, we were at the far end of the terrace. But in one respect, it was like me living at home in a terrace. But of course, on the end, as it were, one is almost semi-detached. Very quaint row of cottages, because the terrace was so arranged that the windows along the front of each house, but the front door of the middle two was at the front, and the front door, or the only door really, of the other two houses, number 1 and number 4, were around the corner at the end of the terrace. Particularly significant, that, because the row was facing north, which meant their front door faced east. And in the winter time, the snow would blow underneath the front door and 3 or 4 steps up the stairs as well. It was half cold. But, as I said, they had the kitchen arranged, and with the doors shut in the winter time, it got very cosy in that room. But that was the only heat in the whole house. So upstairs was cold during the winter time. No electric light. Took a candle to bed, snuffed that out. Oh, it was fascinating, really.
Well, that sort of thing is fascinating for a holiday. But how did you find living like that, after you'd been used to electricity?
Well, one just adapted. After all, there was electricity downstairs for just one light in the main living room and one light in the pantry. But it had the other comforts, I suppose, that I'd been used to, a radio. So what more could one have? They had 2 dogs, and I was so well looked after. It's incredible. I was so well looked after. It's stuck in, well, my memory, and pleased my parents as well.
Did they have indoor plumbing?
Of a sort. There was a cold water tap in the pantry, and that was all. So that there was a cold water tap to what was called the wash house, which was just outside the door, and an outdoor toilet, which really wasn't a flush toilet, because one had to take a bucket of water in with one, but it drained away to the mains. It wasn't mains in, it was only mains out, as it were. Oh, it was so quaint as to be perfectly acceptable. To my way of thinking, as I said earlier, I like to think I was fairly adaptable. And one always had the overriding instruction, you behave yourself, you do as you're told, so one just did.
And what about sleeping? I think you told me previously you had to share with a lodger.
Yes, I was put in an antique, as it would be now, in a iron bedstead with brass knobs on, etc., double bed. Sometime afterwards, a lodger appeared. Now, I can't remember just when this was, but And I can't realise why he came, because he came from a house which was just at the end of the garden. And the circumstances just didn't concern me, and I wasn't told. But he arrived, and I say the Haynes were available for anything, in inverted commas, so the lodger appeared. And for a while, I think we did have to share the bed. But Mr. Haynes, or Uncle, as I referred to, the Haynes is auntie and uncle rather than Mr. and Mrs., a bit too formal. He thought that this wasn't on. And so they arranged for a single bed for me. But I shared the same room. But this lodger, he was a fascinating chap. Would talk to himself a lot and mumble. And,
hello.
Oh, a lot older than I was, of course. I suppose 50s. And I used to lay in bed giggling my heart out, mumble. Talk to himself, no end. But an interesting chap, would teach me one or two conundrums, schoolboy mathematical problems. His job was airfield construction, so one would call him a labourer in these days. And he would go off in the morning with his sandwiches and his bottle of cold tea. It's always fascinated me. How could anybody drink cold tea? Whether they warmed it up on the site or not, I don't know. But he would go off with his little bag and sandwiches and a bottle of cold tea, and that stuck in my memory for a long time.
How many bedrooms did they have in the house?
Well, I'm going to cheat and say there was three, but perhaps it was two and a half. Construction of the house, if one can put it into words, as I say, there was one door. You open the door, which opened out onto, well, just a stairwell. Straight in front of you was the stairs, and to the left of the staircase was the posh room, the front room, which was only used on very exceptional circumstances, and to the right was the main living room. And above those two rooms was the bedrooms. The bedroom at the back of the house, or shall we say above the front room, because the front room was rather grand. It was quite a large room, and it just had the two beds and chest of drawers and a washstand.
That was your room, was it?
That was my room, yes. And the other room to the right of the stairs was one room permanently divided into two smaller rooms. The first division had a single bed in which Mr. Haynes slept, and through that room went you went into Mrs. Haynes's bedroom.